It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levernier. Stay tuned for an hour of mystery. Coming up later, we hear Mr. Keen Tracer of Lost Persons from 1944. Right now, it's Casey Crime Photographer, part of the Columbia Broadcasting System's Thursday night radio lineup, heard at 9:30. Nearly 17 million people were tuned into this story called The Fix, featuring Jan Miner, John Gibson, and leading man Stotz Cotsworth from February 26, 1948.
The Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation brings you Crime Photographer.
Hypnotist over at the Oddfellas Hall, really something?
Yeah, he sure had some surprising stunts, didn't he?
Yeah, like when he put those guys to sleep, then he wakes them up. And always the first words they say are exactly what the hypnotist told us they'd say.
Yeah, but I've seen that done often.
You know, Casey, I'd like to have that hypnotist try it on Tony Marvin.
No, no. No dice, Ethelbert. No matter what, as soon as Tony woke up, he'd say...
Anchor Hawking, the most famous name in glass. Casey, crime photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Our adventure for tonight, The Fix. Afternoon, the Blue Note Cafe. Ethelbert, the head bartender, is engaged in conversation with a rather weak-looking young man and a very good-looking young woman when the street door opens and...
Oh, it's nice and warm in here, Casey.
Boy, does that heat feel good, Annie?
Well, look who's here.
Hi, Ethelbert. Hi.
Hello, Ethelbert.
Casey. Huh? Well, doggone. How are you, Archie?
Fine. And you?
I'll feel better when spring comes.
Don't you remember me, Casey?
Mildred.
Hello.
Well, what do you know? Say, you look like a million in that mink coat.
Thank you.
I gather you know these folks, Casey.
Huh? I've known Archie ever since he was a punk in grammar school, Ethelbert, and Miss Sells.
Our acquaintance goes back only a few years, to the Warren affair.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me, Miss Anne Williams, Miss Mildred Sells.
Hello, Miss Sells.
How do you do?
And Archie Purcell.
A pleasure, Miss Williams.
Oh, thank you.
You know Archie's father, Annie. He's one of our favorite cops.
Not Lieutenant Purcell.
Mm-hmm.
He's my old man.
Well, we have a great admiration for your father.
Yeah, he's quite a guy.
They don't come any better.
Well, Miss Sells and I must be running along. We have a date.
Yes, it was nice meeting you, Miss Williams. See you again, Casey.
Yeah, that goes double.
Must get together sometime.
Yeah, we'll try to, Archie.
I paid you, didn't I, Ethelbert?
Yeah, we're all square.
Well, see all of you again.
Yeah, so long.
Bye. Bye.
Come again.
We will, Ethelbert.
Blondes.
Wow.
There goes one beautiful babe, Casey.
Yeah, she's dynamite, too. I mean that literally. You know, she's a stooge for old Iron Hat.
Tim Lansing?
The political leader?
Yes, sir, the boss. The big crook under the old-fashioned derby who protects professional gambling in this midtown section.
How does that swell-looking gal stooge for him?
Dames are used in all the big rackets, pal.
Like the boss of the Philistines hired that babe Delilah to soften up Samson, huh?
Been catching up on your reading. Well, that's the classical case, yeah.
Casey, Lieutenant Purcell has caused Lansing more trouble than anyone else in this town. He heads the gambling squad, and if that Mildred Sells is making a play for his son...
I thought of that, Annie, the moment I recognized her. So you were talking to them when we came in, Ethelbert. How did he and Mildred act together?
Well, they seem pretty sweet on one another, Casey.
She may be legitimate this time and just like Archie.
Say, Casey.
Hmm?
She said you met her at the time of the Warren affair. What did she mean?
The murder of Mike Warren.
Murder?
Of Mike Warren?
Yep. He owned the clip joint where Mildred worked, and somebody put a bullet through his head one morning. She was questioned like all his employees.
I remember the case.
Oh, so do I, vaguely. Warren's murder's still unsolved, isn't it?
Yeah. Say, what did you hear Archie Purcell and that girl talk about while they were here, Ethelbert, huh?
Oh, he introduced me to the gal. Mentioned he just bought ringside seats for the big fight on Saturday night, right in the middle of the third row.
The third row?
Mm-hmm. He and the gal was going together, he said.
And he bought them?
Uh-huh. From a scalper.
These scalpers are getting $200 apiece for ducats like that, and Archie's job can't pay him much more than that a month.
Well, Casey, do you suppose
they... Say, it's peculiar.
Yeah, pal. It's very peculiar.
Answer that, Whitey.
Okay, Brent. Hello.
I'd like to speak to either Mr. Kelton or Mr. Watts.
Kelton speaking.
This is Archie Purcell.
I don't know you, friend.
You may have heard of my father, Police Lieutenant Frank Purcell.
I've heard of him.
We thought you might like to talk over a little matter with me. I'm downstairs in the lobby of your hotel right now.
We'll be right down.
What is it, Whitey?
The shakedown we expected. But not from the source we expected.
What do you mean?
Down in Florida, they told us the guy who fixed things in this town was Lansing. The guy to be careful of was Purcell. Purcell's son just gave me the come hither.
This don't sound right.
We'll soon see how right it is. Put your coat on, Brent, and let's go.
I imagine you gentlemen have convinced yourselves of my identity.
You're Lieutenant Purcell's son, all right.
What do you want?
You two are professional gamblers from Florida. Don't you know this is a closed town?
We're willing to play ball, but friends down in Florida told us we'd get a call from a gentleman named Lansing.
My father is head of the gambling squad.
I see. You mean there'll be no arrests if we play ball with you?
Figure it out.
We've identified this gentleman as Purcell's son, Whitey.
Yeah. Okay. What do we kick in, Purcell?
$1,000 a week.
Hey, that's murder.
We're not big timers. We run small games.
$1,000 a week in advance.
No.
We're hooked, Whitey. Pay the man.
Okay, Brent. But remember, kid, this buys us complete protection.
Thanks for the tip, Casey. And to you, Miss Williams. I didn't know my son was running around with this Mildred saleswoman. I'm going to have a talk with Archie.
Now, we may be all wrong about her, Lieutenant Purcell.
I hope we are, Frank.
Excuse me. Gambling squad, Lieutenant Purcell speaking.
I've got a red-hot tip for you, Lieutenant.
Who is this?
Never mind that. You can pick up 2 card shops. They're registered at the Hotel Fultonian. There's Brent Watts and George Kelton. There's a poker party going on in their suite right now. That's all. Goodbye.
Yeah, I couldn't help but hear that one, Frank. The old anonymous tipster.
A lot of our information comes in that way, Casey. Most of it's on the level. Well, I've got to leave you and Miss Williams. Go to work.
A little surprise visit to the Hotel Fultonian?
Right away.
Let's tag along, Casey.
Why not, Annie? Let's go.
What's the idea you cops busting in here?
All of you men are under arrest.
You're making a big mistake, fella. Before you make a bigger one, I suggest you get in touch with your boss. Tell him you've busted in on Brent Watts and Whitey Kelton. Tell that to Lieutenant Frank Purcell.
Yeah? I happen to be Lieutenant Purcell.
What?
You?
Just why did you want to get that little message to me?
It has been a slip-up, Brent.
Yeah. Guess you haven't talked to your son since he saw us.
My son?
Uh-huh. Can I have a word with you alone?
Anything you have to say can be said right here.
Okay. If you want it that way. We fixed your son with $1,000 this afternoon for complete protection.
Casey?
Lieutenant Purcell got the full story about Archie from him, then took him to headquarters and put him in cells.
Archie had traded on his father's reputation to extort dough, huh?
Yeah.
What does he say about it? Archie, I mean.
Oh, he hasn't been found yet. And Mildred denied that she knew anything about Archie's fix racket.
Yeah, but the whole thing smells like old Iron Hat Lansing. One of his lawyers sprung the 2 guys this morning.
What does Lansing get out of it, Casey?
Well, he's thrown suspicion of bribery on Frank Purcell.
Well, how? Purcell raided them gamblers and threw them into the cooler, which proves he wasn't protecting them like his son promised.
Yeah, but a lot of people will think there was a slip-up, though, Ethelbert, that Archie neglected to tell his father.
I wouldn't, on the strength of just this one instance.
Mm-mm, no, I wouldn't either, Casey. And their accusation can't be blown up into a news story. Nothing novel about racketeers accusing cops of dirty work. Last night's affair won't even get into print.
Well, not as it stands now, but...
Oh, there's the bar phone. Excuse me.
Go ahead, answer.
Blue Note Cafe, Ethelbert speaking. Just a second. Your city desk, Casey.
Huh?
Your
desk. Hello. Yeah, she's here too, Bert. Haskins Memorial Hospital. Archie Purcell.
Archie Purcell.
We'll get there on the jump. Goodbye.
Casey, what's the matter?
The story will get into print now, Annie. Big prints. Archie was taken to the hospital a few minutes ago after being found in an alley, beaten almost to death.
Since the doctors wouldn't let us see Archie Purcell, Captain Logan, suppose you tell us what he had to say. If anything.
Well, he confirmed the story Watson Kelton had already told.
Shook him down for $1,000.
Yeah, Casey. He completely absolves his father of having any knowledge of his fix racket. And that won't help Frank Purcell much with the commissioner or the public.
No. What did Archie tell you about Mildred Sells?
He denies that she put him up to his racket or that she knew what he was doing.
What did she have to say?
Denies everything we think is so. We can't even hold her.
Well, who gave Archie his beating?
He says he doesn't know. Says it happened so suddenly, he had no chance to see what the two guys looked like.
The two guys, huh?
Watts and Kelton were freed on bail this morning.
They had plenty of motive to go after Archie, Miss Williams. And when my men find him, they'll have to prove they didn't do the job.
Did you find anything at the scene of the beating?
But the guys who worked on Archie didn't do it just for fun. They cleaned his pockets before they left him.
Well, they took his dough, huh?
Took everything. Come in.
Detective Griffo just brought in those two gamblers, Watson Kelton, sir.
That's fine.
But they claim to have an alibi for the time of the beating.
Yeah?
They say they were with the lawyer who sprung them this morning at John Ferris. Now, here's his home phone number, sir.
Yeah, I'll call him right now. Not that I'd take the unsupported word on a Lansing's trained mouthpieces. It's beginning to look as though an alibi has been carefully set up for him, Casey. Hello. I want to speak to Mr. Ferris, please. Oh, Ferris, this is Captain Logan. We've got two new clients of yours here at headquarters, Watts and Kelton. I'm sure you can tell me where they were between 8 and 9 this evening. Huh? You haven't seen them since noon today.
No alibi?
Thanks. That's all. Goodbye. You hear that, Casey?
Yeah. Gives me the idea that those guys may be telling the truth and somebody's trying to frame them.
Yeah. Ferris may have got him to his house tonight just so they couldn't establish a real alibi elsewhere.
But why?
I don't know, Miss Williams, yet. Sergeant, bring in Watson Kelton. We'll hear what they have to say.
Well, Logan, they said they'd been framed.
Yeah, for a solid hour, they said it, Casey.
Mm-hmm. And it sounded on the level.
Well, the setup's fairly plain, Logan. Iron Hat's a shrewd guy. The anonymous tip that made Frank Purcell rate that game was just the first part of his scheme. He knew the squawk they'd make about Archie wouldn't attract enough attention to discredit Lieutenant Purcell, so Iron Hat has a near murder performed on Archie that's sure to hit the front pages. And he makes sure it'll stay on the front pages by framing Watson Kelton as the near murderers.
Yeah, he's sure gonna make it look bad for an honest guy like Lieutenant Purcell.
What can you do about it?
As things stand now, nothing.
I'm not so sure of that, Logan. Archie's pockets were empty when he was found.
Yeah.
Well, I happen to know he had a pair of tickets for the big fight tomorrow night. It's 100-1 that they were on him when he was frisked. I'm wondering if the guys who took him won't use him.
Say, if we could pick those guys up and make them talk...
Archie can tell us the location of those seats.
Yeah, not for a couple of days. The docks have them filled with drugs and the fight's tomorrow night.
What? Oh,
now, wait a minute. Ethelbert said they were in the third or fourth row center.
There's over 20 sections in that arena, Miss Williams, and unless we know what...
Wait a minute. Mildred Sells knows. She was going to the fight with Archie.
She won't tell.
Well, she might tell me a lot of things, pal. He's worried about Archie, and she likes him. When I call on her, much, he may get confidential with a sympathetic friend.
You've just come from the hospital, Casey.
Yes, Mildred.
Well, how is Archie?
I got some news, Mildred. It was not pleasant.
Well, Archie isn't...
No, he isn't dead. He's in pretty bad shape.
Oh, no.
Docs say he has a chance to pull through if he wants to.
If he wants to?
He realizes what he's done to his old man. He hasn't got much interest in living.
I know.
How do you suppose Archie got himself into this mess, huh?
Oh, I don't know.
Said he wanted the dough to spend on you.
The cops told me that.
What gave him the idea to get the dough that way?
I don't know.
Archie was going to take you to the fight tonight.
Yeah.
Get tickets for swell seats. Remember where they were?
I couldn't forget. He was so proud of having gotten them, he told me over and over.
Yeah. Where were they?
Numbers 8 and 9 in the third row of Section F. Why?
Just curious. You know, Mildred, you're the only one who can save Archie's life.
Casey, what do you mean?
He's going to die unless it can be proven that he was just a fall guy in this fix setup. That he was pushed into it, so his old man would be kicked out of the police department. He won't say that you had anything to do with it because he's in love with you. He's protecting you. But if you care anything about him, you'll tell me and you'll tell the cops that Iron Hat Lansing engineered this whole raw deal.
If I do talk to you and the cops, Casey, I'll be arrested for murder.
What?
But I'm going to talk.
Wait a minute, I
went to work for Tim Lansing after Mike Warren was killed. I had to because Lansing had evidence that would convict me of the killing.
You shot...
No, I didn't shoot Warren. I don't know who did. But I'd written a crazy letter threatening to kill him. He and I had been friends, and he'd gotten tired of me. Well, Lansing found that letter and held it over me.
Yeah, that sounds like Iron Hat.
About Archie, Lansing told me to make a play for him, to get him to spend more money than he could afford to. Then to suggest that he could get easy money by shaking down gamblers in his father's name. I did it. And then I fell in love with him. But I didn't know he was going to be hurt like this. I didn't know.
Come on down to headquarters, kid. We'll tell all this to Captain Logan.
All right, I'll get my coat. Someone's at the door. I'll see who it is.
Give him a quick brush off.
Yes, I will.
Hello, Mildred.
Mr. Lansing.
Huh? I happened to be near your apartment, so I thought I'd drop in. Well... Casey.
Hello, Lansing.
What are you doing here?
Oh, Casey and I are old friends.
I didn't know that. How's the picture-taking business, son?
Just about the same, Daddy, like a derby you wear.
Yeah, hard hat's the only sensible hat, boy. And since you've got your hat in your hand, guess you're fixing to leave. Don't let me stop you.
I was going with Casey, Mr. Lansing. He said he'd drop me off at a store. I have some shopping to do.
Pretty late for shopping, Mildred. Anyway, I want to have a little talk with you. A private talk. Nice to see you, Casey. So long.
Wait downstairs, Casey.
Okay. So long, Mildred.
So long.
See you later, Lansing.
Goodbye, son.
Don't ring for the elevator, pal.
What?
We'll take the stairs, you and me.
That gun in your hand makes me agree to that.
I figured it would.
What's this all about?
Me and a friend are taking you for a little ride. A nice drive out to the seashore.
Look, how much longer are you guys going to keep me in this beach house here?
Like I told you before, Bud, we're waiting for orders.
Whose orders?
That's something we ain't saying.
Yeah, I hope we get them orders pretty soon. I want to see that fight.
Fight?
Yeah, me and my pal has ringside tickets to the big scrap tonight, Bud.
Ringside tickets, huh?
Right down in front.
Seats like that are hard to get.
We didn't have no trouble.
It was easy. Hey, car's driving up.
Yeah, yeah, I hear. Give a look out the window.
Butch.
He'll be bringing our orders.
He's also bringing the Celtic.
The Celtic? I see.
Open the door for Butch.
I'm doing it.
Here's more company for you guys. Get in, sister.
Casey.
Hello, Mildred.
it.
I didn't know they had you, too.
Yeah, they got me, thanks to Iron Hat, I guess.
Yes, he told me he had me watched. Came to my apartment because he'd gotten a report that you were there and he was afraid I'd talk.
Yeah. He had him grab me in case you had.
Yeah.
That's enough conversation for you two. Sit down, sister, and shut up.
Hey, do we bump the two of them off, Butch?
Yeah, but not yet. You guys will stand guard over him till the boss comes out here after the fight tonight.
He's going to the fight while we stay here?
That's his orders.
Look. Hey, we want to see that fight.
You'll do as you're told. I'm heading back to town now. I'm going to the scrap myself. So long.
Of all the lousy...
It ain't fair, it ain't.
Hey, why don't you gentlemen go to the fight? We'd be glad to stay here till you come back.
Wise guy, ain't you, bud?
Hey, got an idea, Dad.
Are you nuts?
No, we can tie these babies up, can't we? We'll get back here before the boss shows up.
Well, I'm beginning to believe you got brains.
Sure, I got brains.
Hey, what if the boss sees us at the fight?
He won't, because his seats are on the other side of the ring. I saw his tickets.
Hey, come on, let's get to work. Hey, this was really your suggestion, fella.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Why haven't I learned to keep my big mouth shut? Slip the gag off my mouth, Mildred. Now, listen. Wait. I can see your hands. They weren't as careful with you as they were with me. I think you can get loose. Well, now, go to work, kid. Go to work.
I'm free, Casey.
All right, get the wire off me, kid.
It won't take very long. I only have to untie it. It isn't tied in very tight.
I feel plenty tight.
Wait a minute. No. There. Grab it off your hands.
All right, I can get it off my feet.
Casey.
What? There's a car driving up.
Who do you suppose that is?
Get to that window and see, will you?
Stop outside. Get that wire off your feet.
I'm working on it right now.
Casey, it's Lansing.
Lansing?
He's getting out of the car.
He must have decided to skip the fight. Is anybody with him?
No. No, he's alone. He's coming toward the door. Get that wire off, Casey.
This is a tight knot.
Well, untie it, quick.
I'm trying.
Open up in there.
Casey, quick, quick.
I'm doing the best I can.
Everyone asleep in there?
He may have the key if he comes in here before you get that off.
Finally,
you see, he has a key.
Okay, kid, I'm finally free.
There he is.
And here he goes. I don't like to hit old guys like you, Iron Hat, but you didn't give me much choice.
He carries a gun, Casey. Get
it. I've got it. Come on, Lansing, get up. We're going to drive you and your car to police headquarters.
I had a feeling I should have come out here sooner than I planned, Casey. Seems I wasn't smart to come alone.
Nobody in your racket is smart, Lansing. Come on. We're going to the nearest precinct station.
Yeah, as soon as I pick up my hat, you knocked it off.
Come on, pick up your derby. You look naked without it.
Yeah, I'm attached to this old hat, and here's the ring.
He had another gun in that hat.
You take the next bullet.
No, Lansing, you take it. I had your other gun, you know.
Casey, you've got him. You're bleeding.
He only got me through the shoulder. It's not bad.
No, come on, sit down. Let me stop that blood.
Well, let me see what I did to him first. Pick up that second gun he dropped, will you?
Your name's as rotten as mine, Casey. I got it in the shoulder, too.
That's swell. I don't like to kill even rats like you. But let's make sure you haven't got still another gat on you. It's a neat trick, that rod in your derby.
There's a frame inside that held it, Casey.
I see it.
Yeah, you won't find another rod in me, boy. Two have always been enough until now. Look here, you young people. I've got lots of dough. We can make a deal.
Sure, we'll make a deal. A deal that'll put you out of circulation for attempted murder. Come on, let's get started.
Mildred Sells ain't gonna be accused of the Mike Warren murder, huh?
No, I've not a chance, Ethelbert. A very good reason that the bullet found in Warren's body years ago was fired from the automatic that Lansing wore in his Iron Hat.
A ballistics comparison proved that beyond any doubt.
Lansing killed Warren?
Mm-hmm. After he found the letter that would incriminate Mildred if suspicion were pointed his way.
Well, what do you know?
At least one other thing. The DA won't bear down too heavy on the extortion charges against Archie. He and Mildred are going to be married.
The DA and Mildred?
Oh,
no, of course not. Excuse me.
Right, boy.
You know, this has turned out so nice and romantical, it makes me feel good. Almost like throwing a party on the house.
Almost?
With that big bandage on your shoulder, you couldn't lift a glass, Casey. Ain't it too bad?
Yeah. Pal, I got news for you. I got one good arm.
And I've got two good ones to help both of us with.
Why don't I learn to keep my big mouth shut?
Crime Photographer, starring Stotts Cotsworth as Casey, is written by Alonzo Dean Cole. It is brought to you each Thursday by the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation, makers of Fire King Oven Glass, Anchor Glass Containers, Anchor Caps and Closures, all products of Anchor Hawking, the most famous name in glass.
KC Crime Photographer, on Tuned 2 yesterday from February 26th, 1948 on CBS. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now one of the most listened to programs of radio's yesteryear, it's Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons and the Case of the Moonless Night, heard on CBS on January 6th, 1944.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons is on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Colonel's toothpaste present Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, one of the most famous characters of American fiction and one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight and every Thursday night from 7:30 to 8 Eastern Wartime, the famous old investigator will take from his files and bring to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. Now, Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. Our story this time opens far from Mr. Keene's comfortable office in New York, on a stormy night in the deep South, a night lashed by wind and rain. A ramshackle old cab makes its way up a back road. Over his shoulder, the old Negro driver talks to his two passengers, Mr. Keene and the latter's assistant, Mike Clancy.
So y'all want me to drop you off at the Mead place?
Yes, driver. That's what I said. Will we soon be there?
In hardly a minute, boss. Wouldn't get me to go visiting in there at night.
And why not?
Most unnatural folks in there. Crazy folks.
Saints preserve us.
All touched in the head and the heart.
Why do you say that?
You'll meet them, boss. Here you are, gentlemen. This gate right over here.
Quite a big place. All walled in.
I'll get out and ring the bell for you.
Thank you.
And I'll wait here till someone comes for the fetcher. But I ain't going inside.
Driver, you wouldn't be superstitious, eh?
Oh, no, sir. Just intelligent. I was very intelligent about places where not to go.
Oh, Mr. Keene, I just remembered something terribly important.
What's that, Mike?
Well, I got an appointment tonight to go bowling in New York.
Steady, Mike. There comes somebody now.
Oh, it's a Great Dane, big as a horse.
And a woman with him. She's unlocking the gate. Come on, Mike. Let's get out.
On your responsibility, sir.
Driver, I believe this covers the fare.
Thank you, sir. And good luck to you.
Good evening.
I suppose you're Mr. Keene.
Yes, this is my assistant, Mike Clancy.
I'm Dorothy Mead.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Please come in. Sorry you had to make the trip in such weather, Mr. Keene.
Not at all. I'm much more troubled by what you had to say in your letter, Miss Mead.
Yes, it's so disturbing about Uncle Adam. Let's walk along the driveway, shall we? We'll get some shelter from the trees.
Well, these water oaks, I believe.
Mm-hmm. 12 altogether in a double row.
They're magnificent.
Yes, but they've been going to pieces lately. There's the house on up ahead.
Oh, yes. That's one of the most beautiful and majestic southern mansions I've ever seen.
But decaying, like everything else around here. Oh, be careful of that first step, Mr. Keene. It's loose.
I have it.
Just fasten Nero's leash to the post here. Please come inside. And just to hang your coat and hat from those hooks there.
Thank you.
It's good to be in out of the rain.
Well, if you'll come across the hall now, we'll make ourselves comfortable in the library.
Stop where you are.
Saints preserve us.
Turn around. Get out of this house.
It's that man, the top of the stairs.
You're not wanted here. Get out.
Oh, now stop it, Cousin Roscoe. You're being very rude.
I don't like strangers. I hate them.
Go on back to your room, dear, and work on your plan. Otherwise, you'll never capture Washington.
Yes. Washington. I'll move up reinforcements to the Army of the Potomac. Dorothea, see that I am not disturbed.
Glory be.
Poor Roscoe is still fighting the War of the States, Mr. King.
So it would seem.
Here, let's go into the library.
Of course.
Now, if you'll just make yourself comfortable.
Well, now, Miss Dorothea, to get a few facts straight. This place belongs to your Uncle Adam?
Yes, Mr. King.
How old is he?
About 80.
And he disappeared just 10 days ago?
That's right. That's why I want you to investigate.
Well, now, who are all the members of the household?
Well, I myself, I'm just visiting here. Then there are two nephews and another niece. Mm-hmm. You've just met one of the nephews, my cousin Roscoe.
I'd say.
Then there's also Roscoe's sister, Harriet. Both about 50.
Yes.
Finally, there's my cousin Herbert Mead, about 40, very charming. He lived for years in India.
Oh, did he?
Came back last year with wonderful gifts for all of us. I believe he's enormously wealthy.
At any rate, that was the entire household except for the servants. Your uncle and two nieces and two nephews.
Yes.
Now, tell me about the exact circumstance of his disappearance, Miss Dorothea.
Well, after dinner that night, Uncle Adam decided to go for a walk. It was very dark, moonless, but quite mild.
He went by himself?
No, Nero trotted off with him, Mr. King.
Mm-hmm. Who was the last person to see him?
Well, I was. I went out after him to offer him a flashlight. He said...
Nonsense, my dear. I don't need it.
Oh, but it's so awfully dark, Uncle Adam.
I know every pebble around here by its first name. Come along, Nero. Let's go get some air.
And that was the last time you saw him, eh? What about Nero?
We found Nero here the next morning, tied to a post. Well, we presumed that Uncle Adam had decided not to take him after all, or disappeared after returning.
Did you start a search for him?
The very next morning, Mr. King. Well, the police went all over the grounds, and no trace of him. Then I decided to write to you. Oh, I'm so terribly worried. What could have happened to him, Mr. King?
Much too early to start guessing, my dear. Miss Dorothea, quite frankly, how did your uncle get along with the other members of the household?
Well, he was something of a tease. You see, hello, Cousin Herbert.
Hello, Dorothea. I understand Mr. Keene has arrived.
Yes, and this is his assistant, Mr. Clancy.
How do you do? It was a dreadful business. If there's any way I can help, Mr. Keene.
I may want to talk to you later, Mr. Mead.
Well, I'll be in my room. Delighted to have met you, Mr. Keene.
Seems like a very pleasant sort.
Oh, he's a dear. And about the only one that Uncle Adam never picked on. Of course, Uncle Adam's been supporting Roscoe and Harriet for years as permanent guests. But he could never let off reminding Harriet about her age. He says...
Harriet, my dear niece. Sometimes I begin to think you'll never find a husband.
Be still, Uncle Adam.
I must admit, though, that I met a fellow the other day who's quite smitten with you, Harriet.
Oh, really? Did you?
Miss Harriet, he said, isn't the flashy kind, but for solid good looks, she can't be beat.
Oh, tell me. Who said that?
Oh, a fellow in the old man's home.
I hate you, Uncle Adam. I hate you.
That wasn't very kind.
But in money matters, he was the very soul of generosity. Here, look, inside the drawer of this table, Mr. King.
Hmm. Simply stuffed with bills.
It was there for Roscoe and Harriet to use if they wished.
Interesting.
Boss, there's something very odd about the size of those bills.
Yes, this is the old-fashioned currency, Mike. About 50% larger than what's issued nowadays.
That's one of my uncle's eccentricities. He's kept a bale of cash in the bank vault for years, and he's still drawing on it.
I see. Well, now, Miss Dorothea, besides the servants, was there anybody else around the grounds about the time he disappeared?
Well, yes. Uncle Adam had hired three or four men to work on the oaks.
That double row we saw as we came in, eh?
Yes. And I can get you the names of all the men who worked here.
That can wait until morning.
Oh, yes, of course. Let me show you to your room now. Here you are, Mr. Keene. Your room, Mr. Clancy, is the one down the hall there.
Well, thank you, Miss Dorothea. I'll be wanting to talk a minute with the boss. I'll find it later.
Everything's all laid out for you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Boss, what do you make of it?
Nothing yet.
Oh, this place gives me the creeps.
Oh, relax, Mike.
Oh, I get the feeling that eyes are on me all the time. And then that darn rainstorm. Oh, I wish she hadn't put us off in this lonely old wing by ourselves.
Steady, Mike. Go to sleep.
Well, I'll try to anyhow. Good night, boss.
Good night. Almost 11 o'clock. It is a strange house. And a strange family. I wonder if that storm will clear by morning. Must have a look around the grounds as soon as possible. And see if...
Oh,
great Scott! It's Mike Clancy. Somebody's turned off the hall light. One moment, Mike, while I find the hall light.
There you are.
Lying on the floor.
Almost.
Wait, Mike, wait. I'll fasten it from your neck. There we are.
Oh, sans preserves. What was it?
A silk stocking drawn around your neck like a noose.
Glory be.
Tell me, what happened?
I don't know, boss. I stepped out into the hall. I started from my own room. Suddenly the light went out and I was being choked.
Silk stocking.
Oh, they're no better use for silk stockings in times like these.
One second. You notice anything about the color of this?
Well, it's dark, sort of.
Gunmetal. The same color that Dorothea Mead was wearing.
Oh, boss, I told you I should have went bowling tonight in little old New York.
Good morning, Mr. Keene.
Good morning.
You're enjoying the view from the porch?
Yes, it's beautiful.
Thank heavens the storm has cleared.
Yes, it gave me the chance to look around the grounds.
Oh, did you find anything interesting?
Mm-hmm. But on Mr. Clancy's neck, look at this.
A stocking? It looks like one of my own.
It was used last night in an attempt to choke Mr. Clancy.
Oh. Dear God.
I wonder if you can explain.
Well, I'm afraid that I can. I have several pairs like that. When I went back to my room last night, Roscoe was coming out.
Oh, was he?
He said he'd been looking for some book. And, oh, I know he has fits of temper, but I hate to believe he actually would try.
Here he comes now, up the gravel path.
Ah, that you, Keene? Just the man I want to see.
Good. I want to talk with you.
Tell me, Keene. If you were in a situation where your major forces were disposed along the Potomac and Grant was moving along your flank...
Now, Mr. Meade.
Oh, you think I'm a bit of a fool, don't you? Well, look at these.
Dollar bills?
A dozen of them.
The old-fashioned size.
I've been investigating for a week, all on my own. You know where they all turned up? In the bar back in town. The bartender told me. I have bought them all up. Know why?
Well, why?
Because they'd all been spent there by Ben Matley.
Oh, who's he?
He's one of the men working on the grounds when my uncle disappeared.
Simple as could be. Matley murdered Uncle Adam.
Well, that's very much worth looking into. But what about this stocking, Mr. Meade? Ever see it before? Have you?
Of course. I'm Dorothea's leg.
One moment, Mr. Meade. I'm afraid I'll have to go after it. Mr. Meade!
Stop where you are.
Mr. Keene, this is Cousin Harriet.
I don't want this man here. Tell him, leave Roscoe alone.
Cousin Harriet, if we're ever to find Uncle Adam...
Why, dear, I don't much care if we do.
Now back to Mr. Keene, who is knocking on the door of a cottage near the Meade estate.
Good morning. Are you Ben Matley?
Sure enough.
Keene is my name.
Yeah. I heard they was calling you from New York to find old Mr. Adam Meade.
Well, Matley, I'm going to ask you a very blunt question.
Yeah?
How do you come to have so many of those large-sized bills that Mr. Adam Meade always used?
Heck, I worked for him for weeks on them trees.
You would seem to be spending more than your normal share.
Sure. I'm good at poker and the other boys ain't.
Well, tell me, Matley, about the work you did in those water oaks. Now, I gather that it consisted of hollowing out the rotted parts and filling them with cement.
Yeah, sure enough.
And then, were they finished?
Yep. A couple of weeks ago today.
Before Mr. Meade disappeared?
Day before.
Oh.
Sure had big holes in them. Funny the way that rot gets in water oaks. Holes big as a house, Mr. Keene.
But it never affects black walnut trees that way, does it?
Hardly ever. What do you ask me for?
Why? For an excellent reason.
We're ready for lunch, Mr. Keene.
Good, Miss Dorothea. I've worked up quite an appetite with all my walking this morning.
Not this way. The others are all waiting.
How do you do?
Mr. Clancy's sitting here by my side. Will you sit next to Cousin Herbert, Mr. Keene?
Delighted.
Any progress, Mr. Keene?
Progress? Why, I believe... Excuse me.
Oh, did you drop something on the floor?
I've got a pebble in my shoe. I'll have it out in a moment. There we are.
You were saying, Mr. Keene.
Negative progress. I mean that we can safely eliminate one theory.
And what is that?
If your uncle has been murdered, Miss Harriet, I don't believe it was for a legacy.
Why do you say that, Mr. Keene?
Because, Miss Dorothea, he has been made to disappear so completely.
I don't follow. Not at all, Mr. Keene.
Assuming that he is dead, his will cannot be probated, nor can his estate be distributed for at least 5 years. You see, there must be proof of death through the finding of the body, or else under the laws of this state, 5 years must pass until he can be presumed to be legally dead.
Well, I didn't know that.
Everybody knows that.
Be that as it may, Cousin Herbert, Uncle Adam will turn up all right.
What makes you so sure, Miss Harriet?
A bad penny always turns up.
Somebody knocking?
It's I, Mr. Keene, Herbert Meade.
Oh, come in.
Mr. Keene.
One moment, I'll switch on the bed lamp.
I'm sorry to waken you. It was my first chance to break away from the others.
What's the trouble?
I don't know whether Dorothy has been completely frank, Mr. Keene.
In what regard?
When Uncle Adam walked off that night, he wasn't alone.
Oh, really?
I was looking out of the library window. Down the path, Uncle Adam was joined by... Well, family loyalty is a good thing, but...
Come, Mr. Meade.
The best way is to have it all come out now. Surely we could enter a plea of insanity for him.
For Roscoe, you mean?
You've seen one of his wages, I believe.
Yes.
Uncle Adam always was ridiculing poor Roscoe's military campaigns.
But the body...
Mr. Keene, I know the grounds have already been searched once. But I noticed this morning that the way Nero was mooning around in back of the house. It's only a stab in the dark, but I...
Yes, go on.
Tomorrow, by daylight, we'll go there together.
All right. First thing in the morning.
Good morning, Mr. Keene.
Good morning, Mike.
Huh.
something on your mind, boss?
Well, Mike, yesterday at lunch I set a trap.
And? Tell me about it.
There was no pebble in my shoe yesterday. I was examining a trouser cuff.
I don't follow you.
Come along, Mike. We have an appointment this morning with Herbert Mead.
Maybe he's gone downstairs by now, Mr. Keene, sir.
Maybe. Let's try the door.
Okay. Boss. Boss.
Scott.
Oh, look at him there in the bed. Blood all over his face.
Quick, let's get to him. Mr. Mead. Herbert. Herbert.
Oh, my, a nasty gash on his forehead, sir.
Herbert, can you hear me?
Boss, he must be dead.
No. He seems to be just barely breathing. Mike, run downstairs. Have somebody phone for a doctor.
Okay, boss. Well, what are you doing there, sir?
Having a look in the closet, Mike.
What for? The killer?
No, just his trousers.
Well, we certainly had a fright, Mr. Keene.
What did the doctor say, Miss Dorothea?
Nasty cut for Cousin Herbert, but no fracture, fortunately.
Does Herbert have any idea who attacked him?
Just going back to discuss that with him now. You coming with me, Mr. Keene?
As a matter of fact, I'll join you later, if you don't mind. I want to have a look in your uncle's tool shed, if I may.
Of course, anything. Only we must find out once and for all who's responsible for all these horrors in this house. Oh, poor Herbert. Don't you think you should stay in bed?
Oh, don't worry, Dorothy. I'll be all right.
And you have no idea who it was?
I was deep asleep. Next thing, something came down on my head. I remember the pain and nothing.
Well, you could have been killed.
I wasn't hit with much force, the doctor said. Dorothea, that makes me start wondering, perhaps...
Oh, no, no.
But Harriet is such a strange one, always sulking, always taking Roscoe's part.
Oh, Herbert.
May I come in?
Why, of course, Mr. Keene.
I see you're sitting up, Mr. Mead.
And you, Mr. Keene.
I'm afraid so, my dears.
Afraid?
What I mean is, you know that old black walnut tree out there in back? You can just about see the top of it from that window?
Yes.
Well, what about it?
Well, just before your uncle's disappearance, some work was being done on the 12 oaks out in front, wasn't it? They had rotted.
That's right, so.
And that's understandable. But I find also that another tree was treated the same way. Bored out, refilled with cement. That is very strange.
Why, Mr. Keene?
Black walnut doesn't usually decay like that. It doesn't ordinarily require that sort of surgery. A few minutes ago, I had that cement filling broken open.
Oh, dear God, you mean...
Your uncle, Adam Mead, has been lying inside that tree for 2 weeks. Dead.
Well,
entombed in the black walnut by the person who killed him.
Who was that person?
The possibilities are numerous. Somebody who was mentally unbalanced, possibly. A thief, possibly.
You mean...
Or else a rather greedy and ruthless man who knew nothing about the laws of inheritance.
Who?
You, Herbert Mead.
What did you say, Mr. Keene?
Now we've got a third lunatic in the house. But, Keene, don't you realize that I was nearly killed here myself?
Nearly killed, yes. You staged that attack yourself and hit yourself just hard enough to bring blood. No worse.
Well, that's ridiculous. Well, when you found me, I was completely unconscious.
Correct. The answer is in this night table. See? A box of sleeping powder, half gone. First you gashed yourself, then took a big dose of the sleeping powders, and then waited for results.
Well, you're out of your mind.
You see, while you lay there unconscious, I didn't waste too much time in pity. I looked in your closet, examined the cuffs of every pair of trousers you wear.
I don't understand.
In two of them, I found granules of wood, of black walnut scrapings. In a third, bits of cement.
Oh, now, just a moment.
Night after night, while the men working on the oaks left their equipment around, you went out and worked on the black walnut, making a tomb. Then, when it was ready, you went out in the dark after your uncle and strangled him.
Nonsense!
The same way you attacked my assistant later. You see, You did not understand the laws of legacy, Servant Mead. But when I mentioned it at the table yesterday, you realized you'd made a mistake. You realized the body had to be found. And you gave me hints to guide me. You said Nero had been mooning around in back. Then, my dear fellow, you really gave yourself away.
Stand back, King, both of you.
Got a pistol.
Careful, Mead.
Into the closet, you two.
You won't get far, Mead. I've already been in touch with the police.
Drop that pistol, Mead. I've got you covered.
Thank you, Sheriff. That was well done.
I heard every word of it. I arrest you, Herbert Mead, for the murder of your uncle, Adam Mead.
Train's on time, Mike. You'll soon be getting into Pennsylvania Station.
And sure, wait till I tell me old lady just how close she came to losing her precious Michael Clancy. Boy, oh boy. But, boss, I wonder what on earth you'd ever do if you didn't happen to know about things like black walnut trees and the laws of inheritance.
What would I do, Mike? I wouldn't be a detective.
And so ends the case of the Moonless Night. Listen next week at the same time as Mr. Keene brings us the bizarre and baffling case of the missing witness.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 6th, 1944 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.